This is Thank You Heartbreak.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chelsea Lee Trescott.
As a breakup coach, relationship advice columnist, and the founder of Break Upward, Chelsea is passionate about human beings and their stories. She talks to people about their journeys in love, growth, heartbreak, revelations, and every wound and lesson along the way.
This podcast shines a light on heartbreak, showing you that the most crushing experiences are also your greatest opportunity to become meaningful, relatable human beings. Now, let's get to the heart of it. Hi, everyone. This is Chelsea Lee Trescott, breakup coach and podcast host of Thank You Heartbreak. And this is episode 216 with Jason Gaddis. To skip this intro where I weave between my own personal stories on conflict, go to somewhere around the 17-minute mark. What I've been doing recently is just capturing the beginning of a conversation with my guests. These are people I've never spoken to before, so kind of pushing record immediately upon seeing them or seeing them over Zoom or just in the midst of talking to them in person. And I don't know, I think that there's something to be said about other people listening in and finding out how conversations unfold. I've been a little bit shocked to realize that conversations are starting with where I live, my location, the weather, and that's kind of always a trope. Is that the right word? Or a joke? But that is how some of these conversations are starting. Still, I want to keep it, again, just so you guys can see how conversations unfold. Because I think these conversations, one, it's an intimate topic. It's an intimate setting. When someone is in front of you and they know that they're going to be disclosing something, whether that's the wealth of knowledge that they have, Jason has a ton of it, and or the wisdom that they have. You know, I was on stage this weekend and I'm someone that thinks, no, I don't get the nerves. You know, like I've gotten better about like not in my head going there until I think the moment of, and my God, in the moment of being on stage, once I got out there, it was revealing to see how nervous I got and how in my head I got about myself. And then afterwards, I was with a group of models, some of the models asking me, like, are you in therapy? And it was just kind of stunning to see that being in your head, though normal and universal, you don't have to be there. You don't have to live there. And what I really like about Jason's book, Getting to Zero, it's a book that just came out. I'm going to talk about it in a second. One of my favorite parts in this book, even though it appears that it's just about relationships or can appear when we think of conflict, I think we think or we assume this is us in relation with someone else. Doesn't have to be romantic. It can be coworkers, people on the street, anywhere. But what I like about what he does in his book is he talks about the inner conflict, the core inner conflict, the strategic self versus the true self. It reminds me a lot of the thesis that I did when I was an undergrad at NYU. It was about the real self and the ideal self and the tension in between, which in my perspective, tension, the story of that tension is heartbreak. So your real self, your current self versus your ideal self, which is kind of like the next self, the self that I, if only I was, that story of that tension is to me what heartbreak is about. Jason talks about the strategic self and the true self, saying that when there's a gap between the two directions, strategic self, true self, this gap creates tension. And that tension is the core inner conflict that later contributes to something feeling quote unquote off in your life. I think this has been the story of my life, something feeling off, not being in alignment with myself, the limiting beliefs that are holding me back. Again, these models saying, you know, you don't see yourself correctly. And that was a big thing as a young kid that I even had. I mean, it's coming to me now as I'm speaking about it. Body dysmorphia. You know, that happened to me at a very young age. And if I really wanted to peel back all the layers, I'm sure I could get into how it happened for me at a young age, just about kind of my purpose in this world. So feeling like knowing it, but that I wasn't living up to it. So the tension between that. And it's something that I've really try to soften around. Also, this is making me think, I think that because of not living up to a certain part of myself, I think Jason's book would explain that that's how you end up developing a strategic self that you show the world or that you put on within yourself. Like you strategize how to compensate. And that's why that compensation, overcompensating, the last episode talked about that, right? Like they could feel I was getting super charged up when I was talking about my fears around myself and in regards to another relationship, that it was over calibrated using a strategic self and overcompensating rather than aligning with the reality of me, of putting the guard down, letting, I think, people see you simply as you are. Because I've also been single for so many years now, and I'm no longer blaming the tension or focusing on the tension in my life about the relationship and trying to use the relationship tension to mask the inner core conflict, the core inner conflict, I'm able to sit in more the core inner conflict and to work through that. And I'm seeing that, of course, as I'm talking to clients and I'm hearing people's stories on the podcast and as I'm dating myself, that, you know, once someone is reintroduced into my life, that there are going to be conflicts that come up. And this is when you're really tested. Your vulnerability is tested. Your strength, your transparency, your ability to not back down from the reality of yourself. And I think because I used to always back down or not disclose what I was really thinking, and for me, therein feeling, because I knew if I was honest with myself, I would have to leave the things I was currently in. I would have to push myself. And I was frightened of that. I thought that pushing myself would take me away from others, that it would mean that I would have to face things down on my own. But as I've worked through those things and I've been able to face things down on my own, and I'm bringing someone, calling someone forth into my life, I know that there will be conflicts. And call me crazy, but I'm actually excited for those moments. And if you read Jason's book, you'd realize like, hey, I want to be excited about it too, because dealing with conflict, sitting with it, sitting in it together, approaching each other about it, done right, brings two people closer together. If you believe that talking about the conflict, facing the core inner conflict within yourself as well, is going to break you, then you just feel weak all the time, actually. Yeah, you might talk to your friends and talk up a relationship, but sometimes all that talking up, you do it because you know that underneath the surface, like there's a shadow to it. And so the more that you can see that you're able to address, face these conflicts within your relationships, within yourself, and then know that you are able to really show yourself for the first time, and then again and again, growing resilience, showing yourself again and again, that you come out on the other side, that this isn't breaking you as it once did. That is the thing that strengthens you and allows you to lean into your life and lean into your love. Think about that. That if you were really to start facing the conflicts within and the conflicts with others, and you were to see, oh my God, I've actually gotten stronger. I've gotten more capable of, I hate this expression, but bouncing back. It's that resilience. Wow, that gives me a lot of faith in myself. Wow, that gives me a lot of faith in this connection I have with someone, that they're going to stick around. And when you see that, when you know that you stick around for yourself and other people stick around for you, even after the conflict, then you won't think of this thing as something that you need to avoid in your life, that you need to deny at all costs or it will break you. And that's how you gain freedom, everyone. It really is. That is how you start to feel free, because you're not afraid of the reality of situations or addressing the reality of situations. You're not afraid that you're going to bolt on your truth or that other people will bolt on you once they know that something's going on within you. Ah, it's so freeing. For those of you that are single and listening to this, I really want to emphasize how facing conflict within is valuable, so valuable. I mean, it's the biggest teaching practice, the biggest training you can give yourself before entering into a relationship. But also on your own, it's just like things come up, and to see yourself get through them more quickly, because things will come up. And I don't think you should try to ever get yourself to a place that you think that until I get here, once I get here, then I'll never have to face anything again. I think it's knowing that you'll constantly face things down, maybe not to the same amount or the same level, but you will be tested in life and that you can get through it, that you can break through the resistance and the fear of it. And I'll just tell you an example with me today. This has never happened to me before. I think I've lived in New York, 11 years by now. I don't think this has ever happened to me. If it has, it goes to show you how much you can get beyond something. But today I was in the subway, I was in Brooklyn, and I was listening to my Beats. I was listening to Tarot. I've really gone into Tarot on YouTube. And someone walked by and hit my head, knocked my head and ripped the Beats that I had on, tried to rip them off of my head. And it happened so quickly. And I've always wondered with myself, this is also what's interesting. I've always thought, am I really someone that can react quickly, that can defend myself, that can step in for myself? And I was able to see that. Though it was shocking, though my head hurts, though that moment happened, and why it upsets me is I hate, in a way, having examples of why you should be on guard in life. I really try not to be guarded. I try not to have judgments on people. If I see something that is weird, I don't want to be the person that walks away and makes a judgment. I should be scared of that person, even if they seem off. I'm someone that just wants to and feel like I'm not attracting the aggression. And I did today. I did. And I was able to react very quickly and defend myself and keep my beats and keep my life. But it did happen. The point is that conflict happened. And I really could have walked forward into the day and thought, well, God, more things are going to happen that are like that. It's all about energy these days for me. So it's kind of easy then to gravitate and think oh God, is more bad going to happen to me? But also stopping myself. My friend called me and he was something, don't let the first 10 minutes affect the 100 hours of your life. It wasn't that. It was better than that. But it's don't let a small event determine the rest of your day, for instance. And I was like, yeah, I should really look at that event that just happened. And rather than thinking, oh my God, look what's just been done to me. Look how I attracted that, or the timing, that happened. If I had made the train stop, that never would have taken place. And I can't believe I've experienced that now. Instead of going with that narrative, it could just be the narrative, wow, I finally got that opportunity to see if I would be someone in a situation in a split second that could defend herself. And my God, I did. And I'm a badass. It's wow, what if it was just a reframe in that way? Looking at that conflict and saying, I got through the conflict and I got through it fast. What does that say about me? What does that say about how I can face something that I didn't think was going to happen? I can be a little bit beaten up in the moment, but come out as a champ. So there we go. Still a little shaken up, I'll be honest. Shaken up in many ways, actually. Part of the experience that I was in yesterday was a modeling gig, and they cut off all my hair. And it's one of those moments where it's oh my God, there's nothing to hide behind anymore. I've got to step into this fast in order to own it and feel comfortable in it. So again, core inner conflict. It's happening all instantly with me. But again, I think it's really good. It's really important work to kind of have things happen that are beyond your control and to see that you can withstand them and you can see them as opportunities to step into something new even, to step into a new wavelength for yourself, a new vibration. So about my guest, I will say is he's kind of a guy that is doing it all. Because the intro doesn't start with us discussing what he does, I'll just tell you a bit about him. And I'm going to read from the back of his book because I want you guys to soak this in and just know this guy knows what he's talking about. And he is someone that immediately upon reading his book, I was like, oh my God, if I had had this book for one of my clients, the moment he came to me completely devastated, this would have changed so much. But then I thought, oh my God, not only would have it helped make sense of his breakup, or perhaps prevented the breakup, it is working for him now. This book will work for him now in his new relationship. So it's always relevant. Getting to Zero, Jason's book, is a book that I will 100% read again and return to as I'm going through my own conflicts within myself and as I'm moving through different levels or life experiences with a partner. So Jason is a relationship expert and sought-after coach. He is also the founder of The Relationship School, an impact-based company dedicated to helping people work out their differences and have fulfilling long-term partnerships. Jason is considered a world leader in love, conflict resolution, and interpersonal relationships. He's the host of an extremely successful podcast with almost 3 million downloads, That is serious, by the way. Almost 3 million downloads and over 250 episodes. And he's interviewed the very best in the world. Jason founded the Relationship School and leads the most comprehensive relationship training in the world on intimate relationships and partnership called the Deep Psychology of Intimate Relationships, or DPIR. Again, the Deep Psychology of Intimate Relationships. It goes on and on, all he's done. I'm just so hooked there. And guys, stay tuned for some good stuff. Now let me just read from the back of the book and then we'll get into this episode. Getting to Zero, which came out last week, is all about how to work through conflict in your high-stakes relationships. Conflicts in our closest relationships are scary because so much is at stake. If the conflict doesn't go well, we could lose our marriage, our family, or our job, all connected to our security and survival. So we do just about anything not to lose those relationships, including avoid conflict, betraying ourselves, or becoming dishonest. Sidebar, that's exactly what I always felt was my heartbreak. Me breaking my own heart was me betraying myself and becoming dishonest with really how I was feeling and what I was up against in my life. And therefore, if you really look at it, dishonest with the partners that I had. Unresolved conflict affects every single aspect of our lives, from self-confidence to physical and mental health. In Getting to Zero, Gaddis shows the reader how to stop running away from the uncomfortable conversations and instead learn how to work through them. Through funny personal stories, uncomfortable examples, and effective tools and skills, he shows the reader how to move from disconnection to connection, acceptance, and understanding. This method upgrades the old, tired, and static conflict resolution approaches, this is true, and offers a fresh, street-level, user-friendly roadmap on exactly how to work through conflict with the people you care most about. Thank you, as always, for being here. You are keeping the stream alive. Thank you for that.
Right on. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Chelsea. Calling from, where are you right now?
I'm in New York City.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Where are you?
In the city. I love that place. I'm in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, that's a lifestyle. That's a vibe.
It's a vibe. Yeah, we love it here.
Have you been there forever or?
For 20 years, about.
20 years. Just froze. Do you see that?
Yeah, you're frozen on my side too.
Weird. What's going on with us?
I know.
Here we're back. We're back.
Yeah, we can always turn off.
We're having conflict already.
We can always turn off video. That will help with the audio. But I don't know if your interviews are video or not.
You know, I've been wanting to go in that direction so I could put them on YouTube. Maybe this has to do with conflict, but I think, you know, the ego and the inner conflict has been, I hate this about myself, but thinking about how I look and not wanting to put other people's stories out there because I must not like how I look. It's the most absurd thing to have a podcast. Oh. It's other people's stories. And to think that like my image of myself is what's holding me back is, no, it's horrible.
It's not horrible. It's just interesting, I think, you know?
Well, how is it interesting? Or the way we do that to ourselves?
Well, if you keep it interesting, then you might actually turn toward it and work on it. If it's horrible, you might have so much adversity toward it or
resistance. Yeah, so much judgment.
It's probably got too much charge. You got to soften the charge and then you can get in there.
This is the therapist in you.
Yeah, this is my wheelhouse. So happy to try to help here.
No, I think already just leaning into it with interest rather than, oh, this is the story of my life that's held me back. You know, at a certain point, I think you have to put a line in the sand and say, I'm going to approach this in a new way.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's just words and a story that's holding you back. It's not anything that's actually true about you.
Do you think that there's been a storyline in your life that has kind of circulated the most over the years that's held you back?
Many. One of them is I don't always love learning. And because of that, I'll look for shortcuts and I'll posture over that and make it look like I'm competent. When in actuality, I'm like just too scared to be really vulnerable in the learning process. This is what a lot of people get stuck on in conflict, right? It feels so fucking vulnerable to be a beginner in conflict and not know what you're doing.
It's interesting just in the sense of like the idea that you can know what you're doing in conflict. I'm not sure that people are even aware of that there's like a learning curve to conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. And there's a place to get to where conflict doesn't have to be this horrible thing that you avoid or always goes badly. It can start to go well, and you can actually learn more about yourself, you can get stronger, and you can be more empowered together. It's pretty amazing.
You really spoke about how it deepens your relationship if done right.
Deepens big time. Yep. Yeah. Or clarifies it's time to end this relationship.
Mm. Because of how maybe someone responds to the conflict.
Yeah. If I'm with you and you don't want to come to the table and take responsibility for your part, I'm going to eventually leave you because I want to be with a partner or someone who will actually own their part.
Mm. Remember when you were sitting in the car and you had that breakup and it was so hard for you to even get the words out? You had known in your mind that this wasn't the right relationship. And of course, when you know something and don't act on it, then you start kind of like this self-hatred, or you lose faith in yourself that you'll come to your own rescue. But when you're in that car and just to even say the words, "I want to break up," seemed like such a breakthrough. It wasn't even why you wanted to break up, just the fact that you didn't want to be there.
Yeah, because I was used to trying to weasel out of breakups, and because I didn't want to hurt the woman's feelings and then be the bad guy and then be uncomfortable. So I would just dodge and weave, string them along, drag it out. And I just wasn't an adult. I couldn't be direct. And it took me a long time until that car was like the example in the book of me in the car, and the breakup was like the first time I was able to look a woman in the eye and say, "I want to end this relationship."
And she seemed to take it well, right?
She did. She did. I mean, she knew it was coming. She was sad. She cried. It was very uncomfortable, but she was probably grateful because I wasn't dragging it out. You know, she wanted to get married and have kids and probably wanted to be with someone who could actually like take responsibility. And I wasn't doing that.
What is it about guys though, about like not wanting to be the bad guy? I mean, it seems obvious why a guy wouldn't want to be a bad guy, but men in general like get labeled the bad guy already. So it's kind of like,
yeah. And men are complicated. We're up against so much shame and doing it right and getting it right. And all our conditioning of how we should be and to be a man looks like this. And it's just a bunch of bullshit. So we have to bushwhack our way through to truth and the truth of who we are. And that's a journey to make.
What was the first thing that you kind of remember admitting about yourself in terms of your truth to a woman that felt like, wow, I didn't think I'd be in a position where I could actually say something like this?
I'm scared.
Did it have to be attached to anything, or was it just the idea of you being a man and being scared by anything?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think it mattered, but you know, we could have been rock climbing and I could have said I'm scared and it would have made sense in that context. But because it was in the context of a boyfriend-girlfriend dynamic at the time, I'm scared is way more kind of vulnerable, you know? And that was edgy period of my life to say that.
Dude, that comes from like so many women romanticizing, "I feel safe with him. I just want to feel safe and secure." So a man to say that he's scared could look like there's fragileness and insecurity. Like you're not on secure ground anymore.
Yeah. Some women play into the male conditioning thing, the gender conditioning, which is men need to be the strong one. And the woman it's the woman that needs to like kind of fall apart, and the woman gets to hold her through her pain or whatever. That's just some gender bullshit transcript. It's actually in a good partnership. It's we both get scared. We both are vulnerable. We're both insecure. And how about we both hold each other through our pain and through our vulnerability and just be there for each other?
Mm. Are you married now, or is it your girlfriend you have? I forget.
No, I'm married 14 years, two kids, 14. 10 and 12. Yeah. Oh, together 18 with a couple breakups in there.
Wow. Okay. So how do you enjoy the most, like the way that she shows up for you?
Man, so many ways. She's my sounding board. She's like a rock to me. So she'll be there when I fall apart. She'll be there, when I just need reflection, when I'm venting and judging the world or somebody, she's there. She's just there. And when she's not there for me, it's because her and I are in a conflict and we haven't figured it out yet, but she's shows up in a myriad of ways for me that enhances my life.
When you talked about resentment, you said one part of it is unmet expectations.
Yeah.
I thought that was fascinating that beneath all resentment is like a conflict that hasn't been resolved or something.
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways I talk about resentments. One is the frame is, when I try to get you to live like me, you'll resent me. When you try to get me to live like you, I'll resent you. And that ties into expectations. When I expect you to do it my way, or to do life like I do it, to do whatever like I do it, and you don't meet my expectation, I'm going to resent you. And the part I have control over is my expectation.
So, you know, I hear people say, like, expectations are the greatest killer of relationships. So if you don't have expectations, what do you have? How do you end up getting needs met if you don't have quote unquote expectations?
Well, I don't subscribe to that framework of people, it's bad, or it's like the biggest relationship killer, whatever you said. I don't buy that. I have expectations of my partner that she doesn't sleep with someone else, that she shows up and owns her part, that she is willing to read, apply, and study shit so that we can get to a better place. I have expectations that she take good care of herself. I have a lot of expectations. But those are her expectations of herself. So it works, right? I'm not asking her to be different. So it works. But I don't just kind of blindly love her and say, I don't have any expectations. Go ahead and just be whoever the hell you want to be. I'm not down with that approach.
Did that help you weed through the dating process? Like, were you always someone that kind of sat down and knew what you wanted?
No.
No,
I was fucking confused as hell. And I didn't know what I wanted because I didn't know myself. We don't know ourselves and we haven't done that inner work to find out who we are, we then behave from a strategy of a place of thinking we know who we are, kind of putting on a mask and going through our life in a bit of a charade, you know, like I'm acting in my life. And you know, people can kind of make their life work from that place, but eventually it falls apart, especially in long-term partnership, because you can't hide.
Now, is that the strategic self that you talk about?
Yeah. Yeah. So I distinguish between, you've done your homework here. Nice work. There's a difference between our strategic self and our true self. Our strategic self is, you know, who we become trying to be someone for other people, or trying to live up to a fantasy of who we think we should be.
I'm obsessed with that angle. Go on.
Yeah. So that is necessary in life, in moments when you're applying for a job or you're dating. You know, our strategic self comes out. We're not going to, you know, show all our dirty laundry and our debt and whatever other problems we have to a new prospect, right? We do put on a front a little bit, and we're trying to be authentic, but we hide a lot of stuff. Well, the good news is, in over time, all that shit comes pouring out, and that's the true self trying to emerge and saying, no, actually, I want to be myself here. I want to be accepted and loved for who I am. I don't want to be in a relationship where I have to keep pretending. No, thank you. Because that's kind of what a lot of us did as kids. And so an adult partnership becomes this amazing crucible to where the strategic self and the true self can integrate and actually become one person. That's the same person at work, same person at home, same person on the shitter, same person, you know, dealing with financial problems, same person everywhere, same one person, not two people, two different people where you have to look this way at home and you look this way at work. And
totally. Oh my God.
That's exhausting.
The influence of my life to try to have as much integrity as possible and have as much consistency across the board amongst anyone I met and anyone I was with, you know, on an intimate level, was the Truman Show. I remember thinking, if there's any possibility that that's true, I want to live an honest life. And I started really thinking about, you know, dating. It was also just honest in terms of my head, what I was thinking about the experience, what I was aching for from the experience, that I would be honoring that reality, not just the reality of showing up for them because I wanted so badly for it to work.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, what are you saying? That because you wanted so badly for it to work, you weren't being true to yourself?
I felt like there's always been a voice inside of me, whether it was like an eating disorder or addiction to pills or relationships, that knew why I was engaged with something. Mm-hmm. And I knew when I needed to stop doing it. I think there was a part of me, for example, even like with sex, that knew that I was trying with sex to be reminded that I loved this person. Mm-hmm. Always using that moment to confirm that the feelings were really there, that I was present for it. And having that conflict of where I am, but in my voice that I shouldn't be there, and kind of knowing why I was staying there, was because I was afraid of being so lonely on my own because they were all I had. that just chipped away at me so much over the time of where I was at currently, what it looked like I was in, but inside where I knew I needed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That I call the core inner conflict. And it's when we avoid outer conflicts with other people because we're afraid of losing relationship, we create an inner conflict inside. And it's a lot to deal with.
Yeah. And it's like amazing how hearing from friends and people that come on the podcast and clients, I mean, I just hear nothing but dating stories now. Hearing about how they'll observe in someone else, someone that seems to be retreating, and they'll come up with these ideas of why it's happening or whatever.
Yeah.
But in that moment, having this sense that someone has an actual conflict, even if they won't acknowledge or admit to it, you could ask them what's going on, but they won't admit because maybe they don't want to admit to themselves or they haven't figured it out that, yeah, I look like there's a problem because there is a problem with inside me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you think that if you are witnessing within a relationship, like someone is definitely pulling away, someone is definitely in their head and they won't tell me what it is, how do you get someone to come out of their shell?
You decide how important this person is to you and how much you know them. And if they, like, you shouldn't have to work that hard. If you have to work too hard to get someone to come out of their shell, I don't recommend that type of relationship. It's like, if you're over, I call it over functioning.
You
know, it's like at a certain point where you're kind of trying to pry the person out of their shell or crack the code to their heart and peel it open. If they don't want to do that, then you're wasting your time. If on the other hand, they say, you know what, I'm kind of an introvert. I get very quiet. And when conflict happens, I go internal. I don't have a lot of words. I don't want to talk, but I love you. I care about you. And I will come back around. I just need a little time. That's different. That's a different kind of person. Cause then it's like, oh, thank you. Sweet. That means you want to be here and you're actually not sure how to tap into your heart or your internal place, but you're aware enough to say, yeah, I'm kind of jammed up. Mm. I don't know what's going on, but I want this to be different for me also, because I see it causes you pain and anxiety and I don't want to create that in you. So let me work on this. You know, the kind of person we want to be with.
Mm. Acknowledging the reality.
Yeah. Like, taking ownership for the reality. There's a reality here. I'm not like saying I'm fine and then pulling away and getting irritated by you all the time and then just continuing to like drink or just avoid you. That's not fair. I'm into fair relationships where we communicate and we learn how to communicate and it feels mutual, like we're both in this rowing in the same direction. I advocate for fairness.
You also advocate for standing for three.
Yeah, standing for three.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Standing for three is just a concept where if we're two boats out in the middle of the ocean, there's my boat, your boat, and we start dating, we pretty much, and we get serious, we join our boats together because we perceive that being together has more advantages than being alone. So we partner. This is what people do. And it's like, yeah, we're partners now. And when you partner, there's a lot of baggage that you're dealing with that's in your boat and their boat that's going to come out eventually. So you need some basic principles. And the main one I encourage people to live by is standing for three, which means I take a stand for me and my boat because I'm not going to give myself away to you. I'm not going to sacrifice my integrity just to be with you. I'm going to have my own back. You're going to do the same. You're going to have your own back. You're going to stand for yourself and your success. And we're going to stand for each other, which is our new boat, our relationship. And we're taking a stand for all three. And that is a very indestructible commitment. When two people say, I'm up for that, I'm up for standing for three, because now your boat's stronger. The two of you are going to have storms. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be all kinds of issues. But because you're standing for three, you get, if it's not good for you, it's not good for me. Mm. And if it's not good for you and your boat, then it's probably not good for us. And we need to talk about it and throw it off the boat and, you know, adopt some new principle here, because it's got to be good for both of us because we're going in the same direction. We're partners after all.
Oh, sometimes I really wonder, like, God, people can't even stick around in dating. I don't know how they fall asleep next to someone in marriage if they can't talk things through, if they feel like every time they might say,
right,
hey, I want to make sure it's good for you, it's not good for me, or whatever. Like, all these things require conversations. And I think people are terrified that the conversation will be, you know, you can't take it back. Yeah. You can't take the words back. And once someone knows that there's a problem, I think it comes from waiting too long to address something that it actually seems beyond yourself. The problem seems beyond yourself. But what you really encourage for people is not to be so intimidated by the conflict. The conflict doesn't mean something is coming to an end, or I feel so threatened here, I have one foot out now.
Yeah. I mean, you read probably then about the two shitty choices. People frame conflict as two shitty choices.
Yes.
Choice A is I speak my truth and lose the relationship, or I don't speak my truth and I lose my relationship with myself. So as you can see, that's two shitty choices. The path forward is to choose A, which is really choice C, I call it, which is courage through conflict. You're choosing to speak up, knowing that you might lose the relationship, but it's a whole lot better to lose the relationship and keep your relationship with yourself than it is to stay in the relationship and betray yourself.
Mm.
And I think when people get that, it's like, oh, fuck. Okay, the choice is obvious. I need to go choice A, clearly, which is choice C.
And I have to gamble.
I have
choice
to risk.
It's a risk.
Yeah.
But it's like you have self-respect, you know, dignity, and you also have direction.
Yeah.
You at least like you can confidently say like I was being as honest and brave as possible to move my life forward and to get closer to what feels comfortable.
That's right. Yeah. And I think conflict avoiders are really, really don't like discomfort. And, you know, as you read in the book, also, you got to increase your capacity, which I call the discomfort threshold. Mm-hmm. It's got to grow because life is uncomfortable. You know, anytime you're growing, it's uncomfortable. And if you don't want to grow, no problem, be comfortable, but have shitty, mediocre relationships.
Yeah, you talked about like being able to have the stakes higher in relationship because of, I forget what you compared it to, but like just your tolerance, I guess, for discomfort means that at the same time, you can have higher stake relationships.
Yeah, that are more fulfilling. Like if you have capacity, like parents, like as soon as you have kids, man, if you don't increase your discomfort threshold, you're screwed. You're going to basically shut down your kids' emotions all the time because you can't handle their emotions. So you got to learn how to like be a bigger person, you know?
Whoa.
And that's part of it too.
Whoa. Because you're saying that like, you know, sometimes I guess a parent will shut it down because they don't even want to think that like, sometimes parents get, they feel so responsible for their children's problems. They think it's a reflection of them. The classic is when I had an eating disorder, everyone thinking it was like my mother's fault.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, because of that, really, my mom didn't really speak to me about what the real issue was because it probably felt too close to her. But it sounds like what you're saying is that you have to become a bigger person that can take in and absorb. And like you said, like really have empathy and be able to sit in someone's experience and get as close as possible to understanding them.
Yeah. And sometimes back to the parenting example, it is a parent is worried about losing their kid's love or being judged as a bad mom or whatever. That's sometimes true, but it's actually more true that parents are just, when they see their kid in pain, it just brings up uncomfortable feelings in the parent, whatever it's attached to. It's uncomfortable to have a two-year-old tantruming on the airplane. That's uncomfortable.
Right.
It's like, fuck, this is a reflection of me, but also it's just so uncomfortable. But if like the best parents are parents who allow their kid to cry and express their feelings and they have with boundaries, of course, and then they validate them and say, it makes sense. You're so upset. I'm here for you. I'm here with you. And we got to go get in the car type of thing, you know?
Wow. Wow. Did that all click to you when you had kids or was it also like a big learning curve?
Both. Yeah. It started to click because I started to, you know, when you have a 3-year-old really and a 1-year-old and you can't sleep and it's midnight and the 1-year-old's crying and you're sleep deprived after a year of no sleep, you know, you have a couple of choices there. One is just take a bunch of meds or Valium or something and get someone else to take your partner to take care of the kids so you can get back to sleep, or see it as a practice opportunity and go, okay, this is so fucking uncomfortable. I want to shame my kid and tell them to shut up. And I want to scream because it's so enraging. And I know that would be really, really bad. I love my kid and I love my partner and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to act out in that way. So I've got to learn to breathe through this and just like meditate with the screaming and just relax and allow the screaming to happen. And then just continue to give the message to my child. I'm right here. You can scream as loud as you want. daddy's not going anywhere. I'm right here. Mm. It's okay. You're okay. And I'm with you. But I'm not trying to shut down the screaming, you know, because I'm uncomfortable.
Right. And I'm sure that starting that early when they're just crying changes the whole trajectory for later.
Oh my God. You're talking. Tell me about it. Exactly. A lot of personality disorders and a lot of challenges happen within the first 2 years of life because parents, there's a personality injury because the parents can't be with usually the child's pain and emotions. And so they dissociate, they shut it down, they do all kinds of things, and kids learn to adapt, right? Kids are very smart because they want connection. So they'll do anything to keep the connection.
I mean, attachment theory, but still it's just like mind-boggling to me that a child doesn't even understand language or doesn't have like interpretation, really. They're not dissecting things, and yet they adjust to how their parents are responding to them. And you're saying that that shapes so much of who they become in life.
Absolutely. Yeah. You read the part about the Adtronic kind of still face experiment and the work there. The first 2 years of life are vital for raising an optimal human being because those are the attachment, you know, primary attachment bonding years. And it's all about conflict. It's actually, there's rupture after rupture between parent and child, disconnection after disconnection. And it's all about how attuned the parent can be just to come back and repair that little mismatch, as Adtronic calls it, or disconnect with the child. And repeated reconnections over and over, the child learns to trust the big person, trust themselves and that their voice and their emotions matter, and trust the world. This is a safe place to be. And that's all it takes. And that builds deep security in the human being and then in relationships.
And then what's interesting is that people talk about modeling, right? That they do what they've been done. But I mean, I could see where, like for you, for example, it's like when what was going on in your life, it led you to go back into school and to actually have to face these things and to learn them. Like, you know, in a sense, it's like not enough just to say that, well, I didn't see it, you know, modeled anywhere. It's just fascinating to me to think about the first 2 years are so important. And yet that's when people are new parents. That's when they're in this role that they've never been in before. They're seeing their partner actually be tested and show up in a different way. So many things are being taken from them, like their old life, but also given to them in this new joy, you would hope. It's just all brand new. And depending upon how, you know, hopefully an adult is adjusting to that, like it just makes me think of so many people, I hate to say it, that just don't seem prepared even for that. Don't seem prepared to even be attentive because so many people go blindly into love and marriage. How are they like not going to go blindly into their kids' life and parenting?
Yeah. I mean, there's no manual. I went to the hospital. I got my child. It was like watching my wife give birth, and it was incredibly powerful. And then they teach you how to change a diaper once and they hand you a baby, and it's like, good luck. That's it.
I know. I've heard people say that. Like, it's harder to get a driver's license.
It's harder to get a driver's license. It is. Yeah. And you can have a kid and make babies all you want, and good luck. And it's really tragic, honestly, because like it's intuitive if you're really in yourself and you've done a tremendous amount of work on yourself. Parenting is very intuitive. But when you haven't, you're just going to be acting and reacting from your history, your patterns, your nervous system, and all the shit you got handed to as a kid. And it's not going to be that much better, even though you claim, I'm going to do better than my parents did. If you're not actually applying yourself and learning and reading books and studying this shit and taking classes and hiring a coach, you're moving the needle like micro amounts.
Wow. Because even what you said about like being sleep deprived and, you know, this desire, this urge, obviously to shut it down, and wanting to take like Valium and sleeping pills and just turn off from it and forget that it's even there. That decision and that awareness, of course it could drag on for nights, but at some point you had to say, I have to adjust to this differently. Like you said, I have to take a deep breath and meditate through that. I mean, that's you changing as a person, as like fundamentally. That's why it really is amazing. People like yourself that become parents, it's like you have a knowledge, you've been tested in ways that I've never been tested before.
Right. Yeah, it requires, you know, now it's not just parenting. It could be being a dog owner of a kind of a needy dog that came from the pound or whatever. It could be, you know, a lot of things. Parenting is definitely a dojo and one of the most intense, I think, because of how confronting it is. But there's, we're just talking about warriorship here. Like it's about being a warrior and stepping up to the plate and being the bigger person to learn, apply yourself so that you can create an environment that you really want and that is actually optimal for whatever you're trying to raise, a pet, a human, whatever.
So give me the definition of a warrior.
Just to off the cuff, I don't know, but I'd say a warrior is someone who turns toward their discomfort and feels it fully all the way down and is willing to take responsibility for their part and is collaborative and willing to fight for the good of the couple or the team or the dyad for a better outcome. And fighting meaning not like busting out swords and stuff, but like speaking up for ourselves, having our own back and saying, I think this is going to be better for us if we do it this way. And I'm willing to go through whatever I have to go through to help us become better and stronger. Yeah, I'm curious what you would say, but that would be my off the cuff definition.
God, I really have to think about it, a warrior. I think of it as like when there's a whole, like an army of people that are fighting as well behind you, but you're the one in front and you're leading and you're having to say, you know, to show you're an example of someone that knows what they're running toward could really hurt them. But at the same time, the only way to have victory over yourself and for others is to press ahead and believe that you can confront anything that could, you know, kill an aspect of you.
Yeah. It's getting up every day and saying, I'm willing to meet my life fully.
Meet my life.
Take responsibility.
Did you ever feel like when you were creating your own business, like held back by yourself, like I'm not enough yet, or all the things that you have to do to make a name for yourself and to continue this momentum in a career? Have you ever felt that?
Like self-doubt?
Self-doubt enough that like it actually really kept you frozen in place for a bit and having to overcome that.
I have self-doubt all the time, depending on what I'm dealing with. It's like, I don't know how to solve this problem, right? I don't know how to get what I want here. I don't know how to market my new book. I don't know how to do that. So it's like, I'm going to have to learn. But I haven't let, you know, once I got clear on my purpose in life, I'm like, there's nothing that's going to stop me from doing what I'm here to do. I don't give a shit how big it is, how big the obstacle is, how much resistance I have, how much fear I'm feeling. I am completely committed to this. It's the same with being a husband and being a dad. Like, you know, I'm not going to let my own stories and narratives get in the way of me being an awesome person, a great dad, and doing what I want with my life.
Do you remember when you had the first sense that you were here with a purpose?
That's a good question. I've had many sort of stages of that. I'm trying to think of one moment where, you know, when I was a kid, I felt like my purpose was to help people. I felt that because I just felt a lot of weird feelings when I'd see other people suffering. So I've kind of always known that some kind of mission in my life would be to help people, but I had no idea what that was going to be until my mid-30s, you know?
Wait, your story is the one, I read a lot of people's stories now, that you were made to feel embarrassed for being sensitive, right? When you were a kid.
Yeah. I would say it a little different.
Say it.
Because that implies like I'm blaming people, and I try my best to take responsibility. But the vibe I got, was that my sensitivity and my empathic, relational, emotional side wasn't welcome based on the messages I got from my environment, parents, friends, school, you know, shut up, I'll give you something to cry about. You know, you hear that kind of stuff enough times, or you're a pussy, or you're a crybaby, you're misogynistic, you know, you're a girl putting down women, whatever. You hear it enough and you're like, cool, I guess I'm not doing that anymore.
100%. But what's interesting about that is that started young. And then from that was like this desire, this awareness that I want to help people. Because it's kind of like the situation you were in, it feels helpless. Like it's a cry for, not for help, like that you were having, but you were sensitive. You could feel for others. And yet even in your feeling, you're being told, don't even feel for others. Don't be sensitive about that. Don't be so empathetic. It looks bad on you. You know, like separate yourself from someone else's feelings. That's not yours.
Yeah. The boy code, I call it the boy code that many people have written about, where boys men and even moms indoctrinate boys to be tough and act strong and not show that side, because socially you're going to get picked on or ostracized if you're a very sensitive boy that's emotional and crying and stuff in front of other kids. You're going to get beat up, bullied, made fun of. So it's like, you know, kids learn very fast. Like, okay, I'm not doing that anymore.
I just can't get over how repressed I feel like men are.
I'm with you. They're fucking repressed. And the tricky part about men is we blame men, the patriarchy and men in power. They're all fucked up and they're just here to fuck people over, which is true some of the time. Now, if you look back on every man's life and you track back his life back to when he was a boy, I can guarantee you the roots of his power tripping, mean behavior, blocked heart behavior, incompetency in relationship, I guarantee it came from being picked on and belittled as a boy for being how he was. And so he learned fast that the way to survive in this world is to be one of the boys.
Oh my God. And that's why it's called the boys club?
The boy code.
Oh, but it's also like the boys club. Like they all kind of become like that.
Yeah. And then they, anything when men, this is how men actually keep each other in line. And they do this unconsciously. Men don't actually talk about this. They just do it, which is men are sitting at the bar and they're drinking and they're having a good time watching the game. Right. And one guy comes in, a friend comes in, let's say, and he sits down at the bar and he's like, man, guys, I just got in a fight with my wife. I'm feeling really insecure, feeling really scared. I don't know what to do. A lot of those men are going to be like, dude, stop acting like a pussy, man. Like you need to like do something with that woman, like the ball and chain or whatever. And then so they put down the woman and then they quickly turn back to the game because they're so uncomfortable with that kind of conversation because it's so intimate and so vulnerable. Now, I'm not saying all men do this, of course. There's a good number of men who do the opposite. They receive the guy and they're like, bro, sit down. Let's get out of this bar and let's actually go talk and go on a walk and like get real with what's actually occurring for you in your marriage. Holy shit, that's intense, bro. And then they get into it. So there are men like that, of course, but so many men are, you know, the culture is like sports and not talking about what's actually going on and dissociation.
So boring.
It's pretty boring.
It's pretty boring. Really boring.
I'm with you. I don't like those circles. I can hang for a little while watching the game with the guys, but it's after a while, I'm just like, God damn it. My time is so much more valuable than this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to call it a small life or a small existence, but you could see where having this block around processing anything keeps you so focused on like the only things at work, whether it's like the job or it's like, you know, the game or this with their buddies or this one thing with their wife. And it's like, just from the avoidance of really having to turn and speak with someone and then take that in and have it sit with you for a while. The way that like we want to be so guarded to other people's experience because it might, you know, disorient us really makes us so like tunnel vision on life. And it's like, really, we don't head anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And the good news is there's pain is the great motivator. So a lot of men and women too, we get in enough pain and we'll get motivated to change our life. And that's great. So it's like respect.
Yeah,
the pain,
but even that, I mean, it just, how many men feel like they have a chance even to acknowledge the pain. Let's just say that there's, you know, a family and the guy's providing the whole time. And like, when is it his turn? Does he probably like think to stop, to step back and actually address this circus that he's been, how he's been racing through life, rushing through life. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could imagine a guy feeling like, how do I address this? You know, the wheels will fall off.
Well,
everything
I think,
will come to an end.
Yeah. I mean, more and more men are waking up here, and I think it's more okay for men to be vulnerable. And even in some circles, there's an expectation that a man is strong and vulnerable at the same time. And I think that's a great thing to strive for as a man, to hold it down with the family or the income or whatever, but also be soft at home and be available emotionally and to do his work so that he can do all of that. And it's really inspiring to see all the people doing that work right now and helping with that. But if the guy's not like clued into that, at the very least he's got a partner. Let's say it's a female partner, cause it could be a male partner, but a female partner that's like, that's behaving in a very safe way. That's like, honey, I want your heart. I want more of your heart. I want you to open up here and it's safe. And I want to help you find a place where you can, whether it's a therapist or a coach or me, I'm down to help you get access to that. Cause I notice when you're in your heart more for whatever reason, we have a very, very sexy, alive connection and it feels really good to me. Would you be willing to keep stepping into that for us, for your own life? Cause I think you'll be more fulfilled and happier and it actually helps us. That's a cool invitation. If some guys hear that and it's like, feels really safe. And it's like, ah, oh, that feels nice. Cause
permission.
Some men are, yes, permission. And some men are still going to their mom at 40 years old. They're still talking to their mom 3 days a week to try to get
no
support, you know, which I'm not down with. I don't support that.
My God.
Go to an adult woman or go to other male friends. Like, give your mom a break.
Really? You see this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Are they the stereotypical mama's boy?
Like, no, like- no, definitely not. They're more like, they have no safe place in their eyes in the world to go to. And the safest person that they can remember is mom.
Wow.
So they go to mom. And I think it's cool that moms can show up there, but the mom needs to be challenging the son. Like, son, I love supporting you here emotionally, but you're 40 years old. It's time to like get a therapist, get a coach, join a men's group, meet a woman who will actually support you emotionally like I'm supporting you because I'm your mom, man. I don't want to keep doing that because then if I keep doing it, you won't actually get it elsewhere.
Yes.
So it becomes enabling.
Right. Of course. But what's interesting about what you're saying, the woman, and it could be a guy that it takes her saying this, right? Like that's the part of you encouraging conflict, like to face the conflict. Yeah. She would have to be able to acknowledge that she doesn't feel right. And that's not fair.
Right.
And that things could be different. And she has to know kind of where resources are. That's a whole thing for women to have knowledge and have to have courage to be able to point this out and to provide feedback and encouragement.
Yeah. Yeah. And then eventually as a man develops, like his wife might be the first place he feels safe enough to open up to, which is really awesome. But at a certain point, that's going to burn her out. So she's going to need to set some boundaries eventually and say, honey, I need you to get some friends that you can dump all this out to or hire a professional because I can't be the only emotional support you have. Puts a lot of pressure on me. And when we're in a fight and you have nowhere to go and you want to come to me and I'm triggered by you, I'm not the person. You need to go to someone else to get emotional support.
Wow. So you have good male friends.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I had always had male friends and what I thought were good male friends. And we were real-ish and we do psychedelics together, drink together and sometimes get real. But for the most part, they were fairly shallow because I couldn't go, didn't know how to go and didn't know I wanted to go much deeper. And then I started, you know, therapy and working on myself and studying psychology. And then I joined a men's group pretty quickly after that because I was like, oh, this dude, I got so much to deal with here. And in a certain way, I got to do this work with men without women here. That feels even safer sometimes for men. And that ever since then, I've been in a men's group and always had a couple of very, very deep male friendships.
Did you feel like it shifted during the pandemic? Did they
not
get
necessarily
more?
I mean, and if anything, the pandemic has strengthened my closest relationships. And it's been a good filter for people more on the periphery that I don't see that much. Like, you know, I don't have a ton of time. And so I my inner circle is very small and it feels really good right now.
So I coined the word break upward, and I'm curious what it might mean to you.
Break upward?
Yeah, like the direction, break upward.
Oh, nice. I love that. Break upward. Yeah.
Upward.
What does that mean to me? Let me free associate here. Yeah, I like that. Something in your life that's not working has to break so that you can move upward and grow.
What would be your elevator pitch for why people that are listening that have never believed that conflict could be a good thing in relationships? I mean, most people think if there's conflict, get out now. And in some cases, that's true. But, you know, most people don't embrace conflict. So what you've written about really is a new theory.
Yeah, I'm saying the most successful relationships in the world have one thing in common: the willingness and ability to work through conflict. That's my pitch. And then my next question for the listener is, do you have tension or unresolved conflict with someone in your life, past or present? And the answer is pretty much going to be yes every time for most people, if they're honest. Yeah, there's that cousin Jake or gosh, my in-laws or my next door neighbor or my coworker. Yes, yes, I have that. Big or small. And then it's like, what if you could learn how to get to the other side with that person and feel like you two were in a good place? You know, what would that be worth to you? And would you want to do that? And all you got to do is learn and feel a little bit on discomfort and you'll get there.
Mm. Seems like an easy invitation.
Yeah. Look, I don't like conflict. I like the results of conflict, but I don't like feeling uncomfortable to this day. I'm like anyone else, but I love how I feel afterwards. It's like a workout, you know? I don't always love my yoga in the morning because it hurts and it's like, oh, I'm stretching my growing edge, right? But dude, Shavasana. And then the time after that, I'm just like, wow, I feel so good right now. That's conflict. It feels so good to get back to zero and feel connected to someone again. It's like, Jesus, what have I been doing hiding this whole time?
Because you're saying that the burden that you're even just carrying inside, the conflict that you're carrying inside has somewhere to go once you move through conflict.
Yeah.
And so that's lifted off of
you. You're lighter, you're freer, you're more relaxed, your nervous system is let down, which is where you're the sexiest and most attractive anyway, is when you don't have a ton of tension you're holding. Now you might be tense about finances or work or something else. I get it. But when you can relieve the relationship tension, especially if you're living with a person, man, the vibe in the home completely changes.
I can't imagine what you must pick up on with other people when you walk into a party. Can you imagine? Do you feel like you can just like see?
I'm sensitive. So I can pick up on the vibe pretty fast. And I usually feel it in my own body. I have to be kind of boundaried there because it's not always fun to enter into people's spaces. It's not, I don't want to.
How do you create a boundary for yourself there?
I breathe, I stay in my head. I turn my attention elsewhere. I put my intention on something I want to put it on. Yeah.
So tell my audience where they can find you.
Relationshipschool.com is the best place. That's where our podcast is. That's where so many amazing resources are. The book Getting to Zero book.com is if you want to go direct and get a couple free goodies ordering the book. Yeah. And I think this book will help you a ton and I would encourage you to have it on your shelf.
I'm sending it to my clients. No joke. It's unbelievable. Like this one client that I have, how we started. I mean, your book just to a T is like the Bible he needed from the beginning, can use today in a new relationship. Last night he called me about the first like tension he had with this new woman in his life. And I forget what chapter it is, but I'm going to tell him to read this chapter because it validated so much the fact that you have a voice here too.
Yeah.
Part of the conflict will become, if not now, is disregarding this discomfort that you're having here and shutting it down because you don't want things in the beginning to get worse. You want to create this picture that everything's been going forward. There's no steps back. But I'm like, if he doesn't approach the conflict now, it's just, he's going to lose himself down the line. Like I completely see how it happens. And I feel like your book is like the one book where people can be like, really recorrect, you know, their course, retread their course.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for the support. I appreciate that. I think so too. I feel really, really, grateful. I got this opportunity to write this thing. I think it's a very solid guide. If you're struggling in some kind of interpersonal dynamic, that's not fun and you want to get through it. I really think this book will help you.
And then what about the podcast? What is the setup and everything?
Yeah. So I'm a relationship nerd. So the podcast is everything relationship oriented and mostly how to, again, be successful or be fulfilled in your high stakes relationships. So everything from boundaries to owning your needs to family drama to, you know, becoming a relationship coach to, I mean, there's just so much in there.
Is it guests or
theory.
Is it you?
It's me and then it's guests. It's both. So, and then my wife and I do a lot of episodes together where we just nerd out on different topics.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Well, thank you for this.
Thanks for the great questions and thanks for being so thorough with the book and just thanks for being you.
It just seemed really educational. I got to say, I was like, oh God, I mean, usually I just love talking about people's own stories, but your book is just so packed with the actual element that actually makes me intimidated by coaching, like the teaching aspect, really the knowledge base. And your book is so that where I was like, fuck. I kind of really like pay attention to this because, you know, you helping people goes beyond your story. I was like, you know, it's just educational and it would be a waste not to try to pull from that education. And you had so many acronyms That's another thing.
I love acronyms. Yeah, I'm a nerd on that.
So good.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you. And it's awesome. Are you out there on IG and all the channels or what? Are you more of a behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes.
Do the video thing. You're gonna be great. Do the video.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
If this episode resonated with you, it would mean the absolute world if you could pass it on and let other people know about it. How you can support this podcast is really just sharing it, telling people about it. If you know someone that's hurting in their heart, tell them about Thank You Heartbreak. And if you want to be a guest on Thank You Heartbreak, reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram at Thank You Heartbreak, or you can email me directly at Chelsea, Chelsea, at BreakUpWord, BreakUpWord.com. And if you're interested in one-on-one coaching sessions, you can visit my website, breakupward.com/shop, where you can check out directly from my site. It's a super, 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 super simple process. Of course, I will answer any of your questions before you book. And again, you can email me at chelsea@breakupward.com. There's many different coaching options. And I would love to show up for you as you begin to show up in more wise and clarifying and secure ways for yourself. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be right back.